us how this is actually going is Weremu Doherty, who joins me now on Radio Wātea. Kia ora, Weremu. Nice to have you with us this evening.
Oh, kia ora, Rebecca. Kia ora, tata.
So, because you're involved, well, when I say you're involved with, you know exactly what's happening in terms of this, the Māori role and the opportunity that has presented itself this year for us to change from either one to the other, and vice versa.
Yes, and, you know, firstly, I've got to say, Rebecca, you know, it's a nice and welcome shift.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, we have to acknowledge that they've certainly made it a lot easier, you know, should people choose to shift between the electoral roles. But, you know, the point I make is, you know, why do we have to opt in, you know, when society is very, very quick to categorise us as Māori when it comes into statistics of crime and health. But when it comes to being Māori for something that is positive, we have to opt in. And, you know, to me, I think there's a fundamental issue there that I'm trying to challenge and raise here.
You know, you're so right. You know, they don't make it easy for us to participate, and it should be easy. And so, as you say, if it could perhaps go serve us well, then my goodness, there'll be some opposition coming our way.
Yeah, you know, and to me, it's a constitutional right, I believe. You know, so we've got until the 13th of July to either, you know, shift whether we're shifting from one role to the other. You know, for me, it's a I clearly identify as Māori. You know, I don't forsake my Pākehā heritage, but, you know, for those of us who are clearly identified as Māori, the question that I raise is why can we not be put onto the electoral role as the Māori role as the default? And should we change, as everyone has a right to change, it should be an opting out as opposed to an opting in situation. You know, and I also raised this many, many years ago when West Auckland was going through an influx of people moving out to East Auckland. And there immediately the default was there needed to be, I think it was 6 new schools built out in that region. And I can remember talking with Te Tewhai, and again, the point I raised is, by default, those schools were going to be mainstream schools. And if we wanted to build a school out there that was kura, a Māori school, we had to go through a different process, firstly to see whether we could build a school out there that was a kura, as opposed to the population grow and it spreads out there, but by default, the schools that are built there are mainstream schools. And again, that the fundamental basis where our current system defaults to is non-Māori, and that's the very point that I'm challenging here.
Yes, yes. And we see that actually, Weremu, in everything. Like, I've come off after, 11 years after being a councillor here in Rotorua. And of course, as you know, over the years, and it's just all around the country, when local authorities wanted to perhaps have one Māori at the table, that had to go out for consultation. But if you wanted a Lakes Community Board or a Rural Community Board, Then the council could say, yes, a good idea, we'll have that. But anything for Māori had to go out for consultation to the community, and it was invariably given the thumbs down. So, you know, it's a wonder.
Yep.
We're not really pissed off, actually. I shouldn't say that. But, you know, when you look around.
I agree, Mirabeki. You know, and that's why I'm raising the focus on this as at the constitutional level, you know, as... You know, our fundamental rights in New Zealand to be Māori are being denied. Mm. Where, you know, for us to practice our ethnicity as being Māori, you know, today I got called an ethnicist. I don't know what the hell that is. by holding to the view that I've presented here, but you know, it's a fundamental right that I think we need to challenge and we need to raise. You know, for us to be Māori should not require us having to do anything that is different than that is required for people who want to be non-Māori.
And did you raise this in your position as the CEO of Te Whare Wānanga o Awanui Ārangi?
Well, I'm kind of just raising it as a concerned individual, yes. but within our institution, and again, if I go to the Wānanga institution, our institutions would not have been created if we simply were compliant with the regulatory systems that government had put in place. The likes of Whatarangi and Hirini and Rongo, they had to step outside of the confines of what the system had classified what was a tertiary institution and what wasn't, to create the space to do the things that we want to do. And again, there, because the default was to be in the tertiary sector, was either to be a polytechnic or a university. And if we had stuck within that system, the Wānanga sector would never have been created. And now I'm raising this as just a point of consciousness for our students who come into our institutions. It's to have a lens to peel through the layers at what is actually at play here. Because it's certainly not serving our interests and our needs. I think I come back to that constitutional right for us to be Māori. We say all of these statements within the education sector, success by Māori for Māori, success as Māori. But there's just simply a fundamental issue that's been ignored here, and that's a fact for us to be recognised and treated by the system as Māori. While all of the hand-wringing goodwill people might be saying that, we operate within the system, yes, we acknowledge the distinctive role that Māori have, that's the individuals, but the system that they've created still does not acknowledge us as Māori without us having to raise our hand and remind it. And I think that we should not have to do that. The likes of yourself and many, many others who have had to agitate and challenge to simply get the acknowledgement of who we are.
Well, you're right, and we hear and see so much about Pākehās getting quite fearful of what they see now as strident Māori. Well, we're not strident. We're just trying, as you say, to be able to live and be Māori in our own country, Aotearoa. But there is a lot of ugliness out there, Wiramu, and I've noticed it of late in particular. Very covert now. It's not it's not hidden. It's out there, and it's just out there.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you, Peter Pekka. If we look at how we as Māori are categorised in the health, the education statistics, for many, many years, we have been overrepresented in the deprivation sectors of those two areas, whether it's in health or whether it's in education. And the challenge I have to our system is, when is enough enough, and when is there going to be some real change that is going to shift that? And some of the shift I quickly acknowledge is required on our side of the ledger as well as Māori. Now, there are things that we need to do better, but there's also some fundamental things that the system needs to do first to ensure that our fundamental rights are taken care of. Now, the fact that we still have many, many children in our education institutions being underserved. I intentionally don't use the word underachievement when I'm talking to our ones within the education sector, and deliberately using the word underdeveloped, because they haven't had an equitable chance to be successful. Until we can get the right resourcing and the right support into our schools to ensure, as a fundamental right, again, that we as citizens of this country have 13 or 14 years of education, we're missing out on. So the minute we then engage into the tertiary sector with 3 or 4 years worth of education we should have received as of right, we don't have, and we have to part, and we have to start paying for that in the tertiary sector. You know, that's fundamentally wrong, and that also needs to be challenged.
Do you think with our young children today coming through for kohanga reo, kura kaupapa and wānanga, and of course then with whakaata Māori and irirangi, our radio, do you think now that our younger children are going to put up with this much longer? You know, the sort of just saying, well, near enough, or get in line, or get at the back of the line? I don't believe so.
Yeah, I agree, and I hope not. And you know, and I'm encouraging them to not accept it. You know, and I think that's the work that we're able to do within the wānanga sector. It's to provide our students the appropriate set of tools to see what is at play. Give them the right tools to be able to challenge and respond to the sectorial things that need to be responded to. You know, so they can see what needs to be done. They can see what's at play. You know, and you know, again, if you look at where we are now, you know, how wonderful we can, if students choose, they can have their entire education system delivered in Māori, through Te Ao Māori. They can then also, you know, thankfully now we've been able to see the likes of, you know, Radio Wātea, Wānanga, other institutions where, you know, the critical components that make us Māori are valued as employment skills. You know, and those are the sorts of things that I think that help generate this shift that's required.
Well, in your sector, in the education sector, and particularly at your level, what do you see any of the universities moving more towards ensuring that they are responsive to things Māori in a very real way, or is it just the usual old lip service?
They're trying to be responsive, and I'm being kind here, in the sense that they will you know, strongly object to what I'm about to say. One of the key things that drive these institutions is the financial viability. Mm-hmm. So they'll position themselves as to whichever way the market is pushing them. At the moment, Mātauranga Māori is in vogue, so you will see them trying to purport they've got skills within Te Ao Māori. There are individuals in those institutions who are really, really skilled in Te Ao Māori. But the challenge is whether the governance structure, the management structures around those institutions are responsive to Te Ao Māori and Mātauranga Māori. And that's where, you know, my challenge to them is they're not. You know, we've got some of these mainstream, these universities now trying to say they're iwi, they're treaty institutions. You know, that's a bit off, because which iwi are they formally aligned to, and have they supported for many, many years to make the statement that they're a treaty institution? So, you know, I think there's still a lot of work that needs to occur there. You know, and I'm challenging them to do the right thing and be responsive, because our students coming through need them to do better.
I see, Wiramu, of late, a number of the universities appear to be doing it tough. You know, perhaps they don't have the student numbers that they've had in the past, and there could be job losses. And what has amazed me is, you get the various professors and other heads of school, you know, it's as if they just can't seem to grasp that actually the universities these days, they're no longer immune, and they're no longer immune from the changes that are taking part around them, and they may well have redundancies. And it's like, to me, when I've been watching the reaction, it's as if they absolutely believed that they lived in this ivory tower and that they were there, nothing could happen to them, and that's no longer the case. All around, in most sectors, it's no longer business as usual.
And that's an accurate view of what's been happening, because again, I'll come back to before I joined the wānanga sector, and I have to acknowledge the work of Rongo Wetere, of Whatarangi Winiata, and you know, our own Hirini Moko Mead, where one of the most significant changes to the tertiary landscape was led by those three pakeke. And, you know, in amongst all of the things that changed in there, part of it was the fact that students did not have to leave home to study in the tertiary sector. So that undermined the entire business model that these universities were premised on. You know, you build these institutions and they will come. And, you know, we did. I left Te Uruwera to go into Waikato to do my undergraduate and up into Auckland to do my postgraduate. So I was one of those who went to those institutions. But now we've built alternative institutions that are premised on the Ao Māori worldview that enable our students to be Māori, to stay connected to their communities, to stay connected to their iwi, their hapū. And we've built a system that enables them to stay connected, built learning that is built around the fact that we all have responsibilities, whether they're family, whether they're iwi, to enable us to simply do what they now term as earn and learn. And I think that fundamental shift was created by the wānanga sector. Now, many of my colleagues will never acknowledge that significant shift was led by wānanga. So now you'll see, you know, a lot of these institutions trying to have a regional output into our regions, but you know that was led by wānanga being responsive to our communities. Because you know, I can remember growing up in around Murupara there, when the Forest Service was corporatized and privatized. Yes. You know, so immediately the skilled labour that these mills and the logging industry provided for these communities disappeared overnight.
That's right.
And what that skilled labour masked was there was a labour market that was created by an unskilled labour market. So the unskilled labour market had less opportunity to travel and seek employment as those that were in the skilled labour area. Mm-hmm. So immediately these sectors and these small towns within New Zealand, the standard of living went below third world standards. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for some of us from within Te Ao Māori, for cultural reasons, we had to stay there. So for those of us, you know, in our homes, keeping the home fires burning, their standard of living dipped below third world standards. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, because there was no responsiveness to put things back into these communities. And I think, you know, until these three pakeke came along, was the first time there was a shift to try and put some reinforcement and put some reinvestment back into our communities so they could be those vibrant, surviving communities that we all want them to be.
Yes, I do remember that time, Wiramu, you know, and of course then they were allowing the houses to be removed, some of them from Murupara, some of them from Kaingaroa, and that assisted further in, you know, in undermining the longevity of those communities where people had lived, worked, and also where they had their networks of support.
Yep, exactly. And overnight they just disappeared. And there was no alternative for them to do otherwise.
And there was certainly, Wiramu, there was some social impact done, obviously, but there was certainly never any cultural impact done at that time. And that's, of course, that happened when the Ministry of Works was, you know, that went down, that went out of existence as well. And we were heavy numbers in that one as well.
Yep. All of that unskilled labour, which was soaked up by many of our family members, disappeared overnight. And, you know, those who worked in those, you know, in the Ministry of Works and other those other industries who had the recognised skills that was transferable, they could get jobs elsewhere. But for many of our own who are in that unskilled labour area, they had very, very few options available to them. And again, that's where I come back to, again, this our constitutional right to live and be Māori. I think the institutional structures that sit across our country have still got a lot of work to do yet to ensure that, you know, by default, We don't have to raise our hand and raise and challenge the status quo of things as they sit at the moment.
So Whitamu, just to make sure that everybody who is listening understands that the Electoral Commission, the opportunity for Māori to be on the roll, of course, that's there all the time to get onto the roll. But if you're already on the general roll, there's an opportunity to opt out. And some people might go the other way as well. And that opportunity is until, I think, as you said, the 13th of July.
Yes. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. And again, you know, I've got to acknowledge the work, and I believe you are correct. It was through Rāwiri and co-agitating that we now have the ability to change. As long as it's not near an election, I think there is a cut-off date when it gets near a, I think it may be a month before the election, that you can't change, but then outside of that, we can change as you know as freely as you can. Whereas before, it was every 5 to 6 years.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I'm really pleased because I did know when we started this year at the beginning of the year. I remember the government said, "Well, you know, we'll look at it, but it won't be changing this year." Well, actually, it is changing this year. We have got that opportunity now, and it was through the stirring of Te Pāti Māori, and I'm so pleased they did that. Whitamu, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us this evening on Radio Wātea. Thank you so much, Whitamu. So Whitamu Doherty, and Whitamu is the Chief Executive of Te Wānanga o Awarenui Ārangi.